Welcome to Sidetracked, your unofficial agency of record. I'm Shane.
And I'm Emily, and we help run Trek, a tech-driven, full-service creative agency based in Rockford, Illinois.
Here on the podcast, we tackle our clients' biggest marketing challenges. We reveal what's worked for us and dig into real-life case studies and practical strategies you can put to work today.
Curiosity is our compass, which is why we always start with a question. Okay, today's big question. How can I use web AR to make my marketing more interactive? AR meaning augmented reality. And here to help us answer this question is our senior motion designer, Nick Grobe. Hi, Nick.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good. It's good to have you back.
Thanks. Good to be back. Good to be back on this side of the mic.
Yeah. As a reminder, Nick's the one that also is behind the scenes helping us produce this podcast. And so he's on every episode. Just the world doesn't see him on every episode, only us. So augmented reality is a big topic, and we're going to zero in on just a portion of it for today's conversation in the web AR aspect. But let's start with a high-level picture of your favorite augmented reality experience that you've encountered over the years. And we'll kind of, from there, I think, paint the picture of this journey of augmented reality for those who don't know. But I want to start with a core memory as it relates to AR. Nick, why don't you start?
Yeah, so whether or not this is, this may not necessarily be my most favorite AR experience to date, but one that, you know, you had mentioned the idea of a core memory. A core memory for me as it relates to AR would be back around maybe 2009, maybe late 2008, 2009, Topps, the trading cards, they did this. I've never even seen anyone really talk about it, but they did these AR experiences where they augmented their trading cards or baseball cards in particular. And this was back when AR was on using webcams. So this was something where you would take the baseball card and you would put it, you know, on your desk or whatever, so your webcam could see it, and a player would pop up, hit a ball. There was audio. I mean, it was, in my memory, at least looking back, it was crazy. And it was the first time I'd ever seen anything like it.
I can't like really picture this. And how did you find out about it? Are you like a baseball card collector, or did it come across your desk because you're just into interactive and technology?
The second one there. I think I don't remember how I came across it. At the time, it may have been like the second AR experience I had seen, because I had seen another one right around that time, again, using a webcam, and it was, you held up this goofy, like, super, super early QR code. You know, back when QR codes were just, like, a couple blocks, they weren't even, you know, nearly as crazy as they are, and it augmented the paper with a model of the Enterprise from Star Trek. It was just, it had no point at all, but it was just like an example.
It was just
of
fun.
The technology. Yeah.
Yeah.
It didn't do anything. It was literally just the model. And I think it had been on my radar. One or the other had been on my radar because of the opposite one. But the Topps one blew it away. And it was just crazy. And it kind of, it also was what like bit me with the bug of AR back then. It was like, this is going to be awesome.
I feel like a lot of those early AR experiences were just like for fun. There wasn't a point. It was just to show off the technology and that you could do it.
Actually, yes, I agree. There was a lot of it. But my core memory is an early experience too. And I think for me, the reason it stood out was because it was the first time that I saw AR used in like a way that was solving a problem and that was purposeful. And it was marketing, but it was also like solving an operational kind of problem. Operational isn't the right word, but and it's the IKEA catalog. So the IKEA catalog had you could scan, I think it was using their app, you would scan a page in the catalog and it would use the catalog as the marker, the thing that launched and anchored the experience. And then it would put like the couch on top of it in real size. And so you could like lay the catalog down in your room and then scan it with your phone and step back, and this giant model life size of the couch would pop up in your room, all viewing it through your phone. And you could see what the couch looked like. And like, obviously, there were nuances that were really weird with, you know, it was like really big, or the color wasn't like quite right green. It was like a darker green than like it really was. But it was a really cool, purposeful experience that IKEA one, you never know what you're getting until you go to the store because everything is like assemble it yourself. And so it showed you the end product. So it was also helpful when you took the thing home and you could see like, oh, I had put it here. What is that going to look like? And so it just felt the most purposeful, and I enjoyed it.
Actually useful. Okay,
Yeah, for
so my
sure.
core memory with AR is actually a trek experience because when I joined a trek in 2017, you all were already working on AR and like deep in AR, and I had never heard of it. I was like, augmented reality, what is this? But something that the team was doing around the time that I joined the company was using augmented reality to create trade show traffic drivers. So again, like, you know, it's useful. Like there's a point to the experience, but it's also fun. And one that I think my first encounter with AR was a trade show traffic driver that we called Hoops Madness that we did for a client. They were going to a trade show and they wanted to show off a particular like synthetic paper that they made. And the application for this paper is usually like in restaurants, like menus or table tents. And so we set up the booth to be like a restaurant and created these table tents made out of this paper. And then you could come to the booth, scan the table tent and play a basketball game. And it just so happened that the trade show lined up with March Madness that year. So it was like March Madness is in the air. You can come to the booth, you can play this basketball game. And it was like a really fun game. So like fun, but also the purpose was get people coming back to the booth. And then in the booth, there was like, I think a leaderboard. So you could come back and play again and like try to stay at the top of the leaderboard. So it was being used to engage people and get them coming back again and again, learning more about the product, interacting with the product. And that experience, just watching that Trek made this, I had nothing to do with it. It was like I was brand new, and I was just like, that is so cool that you can do that with technology.
Yeah. Well, let me paint the scene for you on how we got there. And I'm even coming in before this Tops ex or just after really this Tops experience that Nick described. But like, let's say this is 2015 when I started, I should say. So in 2015, it was very common around the office to see different team members playing with AR on their phone, or you would see different models on people's screens, or somebody with a Google Glass or Oculus or a Google Cardboard, if you remember that. We were experimenting and playing with all of the realities on
Yeah,
technology,
not
you
just
know?
AR, VR, and like MR, mixed reality. I haven't heard that one in a while, though.
And we were just experimenting with like these different technologies and how we could extend the communication goal for our clients, and trying to keep the core being of those two things that we've already identified here. Something really cool that's just like, wow, like Nick's experience, something that grabs your attention, makes you excited about technology and like what you could do in marketing. And then second is something purposeful, like what you and I are saying, Shane, is the experiences needing to be something that solved some kind of problem. And so we were experimenting constantly, creating all of these different experiments of postcard driven. So you would scan a postcard and it would launch an experience. And at that point in time, you had to have a mobile app. So you had to download an app from the store and then access the experience that way. We were constantly preaching. My dad was out speaking a whole bunch on the topic. Imagine this future where the AR capability is built into your phone. You know, your camera will just open and you'll be able to scan and see augmented reality. I'll pause there. Nick, what am I missing from that era? that original AR world that we like lived and breathed in?
Well, I mean, you hit it on the head. I mean, not sound cliche, but it was the Wild West back then for that. Like, I feel like looking back, we really were legitimately like on, you know, at the forefront, like always trying to do, you know, anticipate what the technology was doing, trying to figure out how we could use it. And, you know, the evolution, even then things were moving really fast in terms of how you could, not only how you could interact with it once it was done, but also in terms of how it was being built. Like those first experiences that I was talking about where you're using the webcam, those used, this dev environment called Flex, which is like, it evolved from Flash. You know, if you can remember back then, but it was a less visual version of Flash and more robust in the development. And there was something called FlarKit, and it like integrated with Flash Builder, and that's how you could do it. You know, over the next few years, all these different separate platforms started coming out. They were creating SDKs that you could pick up and put into your own app because, mm-hmm. To your point, it all involved an app back then. But then also, literally just 50 different like web-based, not web-based in how you viewed it, but web-based creators like WYSIWYGs for AR, you know, the Layars, the Erasmas, the Wikitudes, like all these, what is now like, if you think Zappar, if you think of current technology, all these different companies that had these online builders that required less coding or could get you up to speed. So there was just so much going on. And they could all output to these different ways, but all surrounding an app, essentially deployment.
I feel like the way AR felt at that time in like 2015 to 2017 for people who were working on it is the way AI feels today for a lot of people.
Mm.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can imagine that, yeah.
It's like you're trying to paint the picture for people of what is possible and what can be. But your hands are also tied in the reality of what's possible now. And so you have to hold the tension of those two things and experiment.
And there's constantly like new platforms coming out and like people trying to like build something and get it out there and figuring out like, you know, which ship are we going to get on here? There's 50 ships.
It
very much felt like that.
Well, I was going to say a lot of it came down to like what you wanted to do with it too. Some tech would, you know, supported this type of media or that type of media or this, you know, maybe I didn't want a marker-based experience. Maybe I wanted, what was it called, a SLAM experience at the time where it could be placed on like a plane in the real world. So, you know, you needed to kind of pick a technology based on what you wanted to do or, better option, plan your experience around what the technology did well, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we hit this critical point where you had to choose a technology based on the application, like you're saying, Nick. And we had found what we thought was the unicorn in Matayo. And they could do the most. It was the most reliable for everything. We built all these experiences through their Genio app is like the app was branded kind of like under the umbrella of the company. And we thought, okay, this is the future. This is where things are going. And then we get news that Apple has bought them and we are simultaneously thrilled because this is the future. This is, we put our money in the right, on the right horse. Apple sees the value too, and they're going to build it into phones. Then we were also nervous because we thought, what are they going to do with it? Are they going to let it run or are they going to just absorb it? And it turns out they absorbed it. And the technology was just like, I think Apple bought it. And then Nick, correct me if I'm wrong. It was like a month later, they were like, you've got a month to get your stuff out. It's gone. Like they shut it down pretty immediately.
Yeah. Yeah. They were definitely not going to let them exist separately, you know? Yeah. So it was kind of crazy. And to your point, yeah, we were using that very extensively. I mean, we had a good relationship with the folks over there. You know, we worked really closely with them. So
they would call us and say like, how did you do this one thing? Or, and we would say like, hey, we want to push this other area. Like it was a very, it was awesome collaborative relationship.
Yeah.
But then at that point, it kind of like when they shut that tool down, the turn in the industry started to happen where the technology slowed gaining traction and the idea of AR became a little bit more transitional. Like the tolerance for another app, having to download another app, was kind of reaching its peak. Mm-hmm. And people didn't want to download an app for the experience. Businesses didn't want to pay for an app to be able to use AR themselves. And so it was kind of a lull, I would say, in like an optimal AR experience for a couple of years until this reality of being able to just use your phone to launch the experience sans an app came into the picture. And that's web AR. And that is the modern day realization of what we were talking about in 2015. As you use your phone to scan a QR code, it resurrected the QR code. It's back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it launches the experience, the AR experience, in the same ways we were talking about in 2015, just now through your web browser.
Yep.
So, all of that really lengthy context and background for everybody to sort of move into then today, how do we use web AR in a marketing context and what can it actually do that's purposeful and that is still attention grabbing? It's hard to get people's attention. So Nick, in your mind, like, what are some of the ways you can use AR in a web AR context today that you think is most meaningful?
I mean, that is still, I think, the biggest like hurdle to get over, even as used to, quote unquote, people are to seeing it now. People aren't always sure what they're seeing or have a complete handle on what it is, you know, But I also think that's because a lot of times they're using it in ways that they don't even realize. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, a lot of the things that our phones do now natively in terms of like tracking data from the world and taking it in and then delivering, you know, outputs and info and things like that that we use, I feel like on some level that could arguably be AR, you know, and people are pretty used to that, I think, but still this, and then some of the things like that IKEA catalog you talked about, I mean, that's continued to grow, you know, to where now instead of laying the marker down on your floor or whatever, you can use, you know, it'll take advantage of the motion sensors and everything and positioning of your phone. And it can actually track planes and things like that and put it on your floor and allow you to move it around and scale it. And, you know, even, you know, casting shadows and things like that. So,
yeah. And like an example of that is you can log in today to the Amazon app and drop in a lot of different products in a 3D sense and their actual size onto the table in front of you, mm-hmm. like you're saying, Nick. And so people might not realize that is AR that they have access to now, to your point. I want to circle back on like effective experiences, but what is the, what are some other ways that people might've encountered AR that they didn't realize this is augmented reality that I'm encountering right now?
I think like face filters.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Like any of the apps that we use. Like, and usually that's also just for fun. But yeah, like face filters in social media apps or ones where it's like, you know, you can try on this makeup or you can try on this outfit or try on this hairstyle. That kind of thing. Eyeglasses.
Pokemon Go was an app that was completely centered around AR. Is that still a thing?
I know kids that play it still.
Oh, okay. Well.
Oh, yes. Yeah. We have, yes. My child has friends that play.
Nice. Is there a gym near your house?
So they, I mean, New York City is a Pokemon Go, like,
mecca.
Yes. Like, you can go out in any neighborhood in New York City and there. So I don't play myself, so I don't know all the lingo. But I hear that this is a great place to do Pokemon Go.
Nice. That's you know, what's crazy about that is that, well, I don't want to go off on this tangent, but I mean, that is based on a game from, I can't remember what they called the game, but it was Niantic Studios. And they had basically, I can remember playing that, this game that they had back in the day where it was all location based. And it was like when you signed up, you were on a team. You were either like the red team or the green team. And it was sort of like a world takeover type thing. And it used locations in your area and things like that. And you could sort of hold locations in the real world and things like that. And I'm pretty sure that those guys were bought up. And that's what, and I guess my point is with this is like, yeah, people were using it, but it didn't really set the world on fire, you know? And then it got bought up. They attached a popular licensed property to the technology, and now it's, you know, and it it brought it into to people's sort of consciousness, you know?
Yeah. Well, I do think a valid purpose and a valid use for AR is entertainment, you know? Face filters and, for sure. and games are a real life good application of it. But maybe let's think about things that hit those two criteria of being purposeful and being fun in a marketing context. So you mentioned, Shane, traffic drivers at in-person events. So times when you can control an environment where there's a webcam and there's this ability to interact in a set location. That creates a memory because that's augmented reality is I have given lots of talks on augmented reality. And my point is always that you want to create a moment in time, but it's generally just another channel for communicating with your audience. And so the message you communicate in the channel needs to be appropriate and purposeful. So in the environment of the events, it's play this game, interact with our product in a virtual way or in a physical way so that you remember it later. Or maybe you take it with you and you play it with your kids or that kind of thing.
Yeah, we try to create lasting experiences with AR too. So another way to use it in a marketing context is to like extend the life of print pieces, like marketing collateral that, you know, say you've got a brochure. I've got six panels that I can fit content onto. You can extend that content in the short term by using AR to launch experiences from the print piece that then gives the person more information, more to interact with, like additional, you know, videos to watch or 3D models. Like say it's a brochure about a product, launch the 3D model so you can actually turn it around and look at it from a bunch of different angles or like put it into your space, but then also extending the life of that print piece by going back and updating those AR experiences regularly. So maybe sending somebody back to that brochure. Hey, we have a new video. We have a new model. We have a new thing to interact with. You only had to print that brochure once, but you can keep sending them back again and again. So we've done that with marketing collateral, also like training manuals that need to be updated. You print it once and then go back and update it as regularly as you need to. So maybe the print piece has kind of the evergreen content on it, and then the augmented reality part of it has the part that needs to be updated more regularly.
And you can also have, going back to old terminology and old pioneering AR world, we would say you can have a marker-based experience, like what you're talking about, where it's tied to a piece of print, mail, brochure, you know, whatever. Or you can have the markerless experience where it's not tied to something physical. And I think that's a distinction that's made easier maybe now with web AR too. So before you used to have two different kinds of technologies in order to have that. So where I'm going with this is that now it with most tools in the web AR world, you can have something that's marker based as part of the experience and then other elements that you can like drop into the experience. Like a model of something, a interactive element that you can drop in that's not tied to the marker.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe there's a button there that you can tap to register for an upcoming event or get more information about the product you're looking at or something like that. So there's a lot more mixing of different possibilities to like truly create a custom experience for your audience.
Yeah, I think the challenge with marker-based experiences these days is what are we doing here with this augmented reality that couldn't be done with a QR code? Mm-hmm. So we don't just want to launch a video. Like that's right. That used to be a use case for AR, you know, launch a video from a marker. That's no longer a good use case for AR because you can do that with a QR code and the camera on your phone now. So it is more like much more interactive experiences that are moving someone from maybe like a physical thing in the real world, if it's marker based, to a digital interaction.
Nick, I asked you your favorite experience, core memory.
Mm-hmm.
But as we're thinking about most effective experiences, best ways to use it in an impactful way, you've done, I don't know, hundreds of these experiences over your lifetime with Trek. Which one stands out to you as being your favorite or the most effective in terms of execution and purpose?
I'm going to take the second half of that, I guess, right? And say like,
okay,
if most effective in terms of purpose, just because I think that's what we're trying to get to, you
know?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I'm going to kind of say this without saying certain names and stuff, because this was a proof of concept and it never really, it unfortunately never went to complete fruition, but we had it working and it was pretty awesome.
Was it a very popular telecommunications company?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was. Okay. So yeah, mm-hmm. So that's what it was, a very popular telecommunications company. And they were trying to sort of, I guess, twofold. I mean, first and foremost, they were trying to make a more engaging and seamless and better experience for familiarizing people to the equipment, mm-hmm. how to its uses, setup, things like that. But also, I think
home installation of routers. They were seeing an increase in people wanting to install them themselves, internet browsers.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And also, you know, that old cliche, like, what? No one reads the manual. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think trying to get around that too, and probably streamline packaging and all that stuff too at the time, you know? So anyway, we were using a technology to basically augment not only the basically the components. Some of the materials that were in there, that you could read, but also then get further information after scanning them, but also augment the components. So, you know, you scan the router or, you know, a controller, and all of a sudden now the AR recognizes that, it overlays, you know, tool tips and mm-hmm. also shows you step by step, oh, what is your equipment? What is your situation? And then shows you a 3D sort of walkthrough of how to hook these things up.
So you like actually scan the router and it's like, put this piece here. Mm-hmm. Now put that piece over there.
Yeah. And you could like zoom in or turn it around to be like, what port did I need to plug this into? And
oh, cool.
Yeah. And what was cool too was, because I think we've all seen that documentation, you get it. And it's like, again, I guess in order to streamline things or whatever the case may be, they're like, find which unit you have, you know, and you got to turn to the appropriate section of directions. And, you know, that could be problematic for people. So just being able to for the device to recognize what your unit is and then serve you up the appropriate documentation without having to dig for it, I think that's pretty cool. And definitely, and it's a better experience for the user.
Yeah, totally. I know we've also done a little bit of experimentation with personalized AR experiences where we're using a database to customize the experience with variable data. Can you talk about any of those experiments?
I think if we're talking about what's the most effective, it is starting with the goal of like, what are you struggling to get your audience to understand or to do? And one application that I thought was very viable for that, and then you can go, Nick, but it was in statements, in billing statements.
Yeah, that's where I was going with it too.
Yeah, being able to visually see like trends of your power usage over time. Interact with it so that like it would decrease technical support because someone could like tap on their diagram and it would give them more information about the data that the company had on that individual who's interacting within the experience. So kind of like blending AI, and this is like me building on the experience of what it could be, but using all the data that you have on somebody and letting them interact with it in like a visual way. But then also that experiment stemmed from getting people to pay, and like they were giving them all these ways, like you can go online, you can do this, you can scan a QR code, and it still didn't really make a difference. So they were experimenting with how do we make it fun for people to get a bill and then want to interact with it. And then, oh yeah, you could pay here too. And there's a button to pay your bill in the experience. Or a button to call support to say, like, you know, billing support, why is my bill so high, or that kind of thing. To me, that checks a lot of boxes in the purpose piece of that. That wasn't
for sure.
That wasn't web AR at the time, though. Yeah. Nick, anything you'd add?
I mean, just in terms of, again, back to kind of what you were saying about not only having all the data, but then being able to explain, you know, statements of whatever it is, you know, all this transactional data or things and or usage or however it is, you know, because sometimes you look at those things and it's just, I don't understand what I'm looking at here. You know, we know that people take in information and learn differently. Some are more visual, some are auditory. All those things are available, you know, using AR, and to make it personalized, and to think about, which we did and we're doing, thinking about security and privacy on top of all that. Like it was cool and purposeful.
A couple years ago, we sent a holiday card to our clients that had a personalized AR experience. It was like a face filter on your camera, but it had like your own name in it, and it just like pulled in some variable data, and it was just fun, but it was like a fun way to communicate with clients and let them know we were thinking about them during the holiday season. And you could also like take a picture and share it on social.
Yeah, that does get to the effectiveness and making your marketing more effective. You know, the experience that customers and prospects are expecting now is more personalized, even if they can't even if they're not explicitly saying, I want my name in this kind of thing. People want to feel known. They want to feel like understood in their buying journey. And anything you can do to further that and meet them where they are is only going to make it more effective. So many possibilities with WebAR, different ways to make it more exciting.
Yeah, and also make it sticky. I mean, I know now we're kind of used to seeing these things via apps, but like, and I mean actual apps, you know, but location based stuff, you know, which we really still haven't seen catch, but now the technology is there to do it. So I think that could be really cool, you know.
Right. Problem solved. This particular example is near and dear to my heart because it's we were talking about earlier, marker-based and doing AR, web AR specifically in print. So we had a print client and they were producing a children's book. And they were looking for ways to demonstrate the ability to change messages over time or to extend what was printed on a piece and build in AR in a way that would excite and inspire their recipients. So we wrote a children's book. Shane wrote a children's book. We had it illustrated. And then over the course of a couple of different elements in the story or scenes of the story, maybe is a better word, you could scan using the QR code, the web AR, and then it would launch you into another branch of the story that is only accessible through the augmented reality. It's kind of like one of those hidden secret messages. So Shane, you were the author and then Nick produced the, you know, the AR aspect of it. So I want to hear from both of you about that project and how it was an effective use of AR.
Oh, it was that was such a fun project. I think it was an effective use of AR because one of the other things that they wanted to demonstrate is just the value of print books in a, you know, in a world where some people might be questioning the value of print or the value of print books.
Not you or you know, I, but others.
No. But like showing like you can do really cool things with print books, especially for kids that get them excited to read, that keep them engaged, like even when they've got, you know, video games competing for their attention. And so, yeah, in writing the story, it was really cool because there were kind of like two layers to the story. So the way I thought about it was there's what's happening on the page and then there's what's happening in the character's imagination as these like real world things happen on the page. And so you could just read the book without interacting with the AR and you would get the story. But if you then scanned and interacted with the AR, you would get, okay, you know, when like the little girl's mom tells her to clean her room in real life, like this is what she's imagining in her head. It's like monsters or like space aliens. And so the AR experience was like really like fun and imaginative and dynamic and lots of movement and sound compared to like the illustrations on the page that were showing what was really happening in the character's real life. It was very fun to think about.
I loved it. Mm-hmm. Nick, what do you think worked well about it?
I think, I mean, just starting at the beginning with, you know, the writing that Shane had done, the great and engaging artwork that Kyle had done. You know,
yeah, we should shout out illustrator Kyle Beckett, who worked on this project with us and is amazing.
Yeah, you can look him up on Instagram.
Absolutely. And, you know, starting with, again, great content, beautiful assets, you know, and then being able to just augment and add that other additional layer. You know, Shane, you mentioned audio. I always thought that was like a big thing with those pieces was that, you know, the full sound effects and music bed and all that stuff, just because to me that, I mean, I think audio just brings so much color to our world anyway, you know, so, and puts you in
set
a mood.
The musician.
Sets the scene, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So to, again, be able to take what was already there into so many different levels, and then make these characters move, you know, almost, you know, give them even more of a voice, even though there wasn't any dialogue in these, right? But just fleshing out who they were, you know, I thought that was really cool. And it really did, you know, just little things, you know, like making the page, the video transition from the actual page it was on, you know, using that as a still and having it like, you know, morph into the start of this animation for an example or whatever. I think there was a number of things we did to make it pretty seamless. And I thought it turned out really nice.
In summary, for me, when you think about AR from the start of a project and then that's pulled through the execution, mm-hmm. it feels like a true channel, feels like a robust experience that's meant to be there. Whereas when you come in after and you say, oh, AR would be really cool, let's slap it on the page, it is a very different experience that the end user can feel. And I think thinking about it, planning about it from the beginning of this project really is what made it super effective.
For sure.
Problem solved.
Thanks for joining us, Nick.
Yeah, thanks for being here.
Absolutely. Thank you, you guys. It was great talking about this stuff, and let's do some more.
This year marks our 30th year in business. In this season of Sidetracked, we're gathering Trekkies at the bar to reminisce about our favorite moments from the last three decades.
So one of the memories I've had, we've always had really great parties and celebrations at Trek, and one of the premier things we do, I think, is we celebrate wedding we give wedding showers and baby showers and things. And one that really sticks in my mind is we had a Texas baby hold'em baby shower.
Like Texas hold'em poker?
Yep. So okay. Your dad organized a Texas hold'em tournament. That was like the big rage at the time.
Big
right?
poker guy, yeah.
Right. Mm. And everybody who came to the shower could buy in for chips, and that buy-in money became part of the baby shower gift. Mm. And we had this big, you know, knockdown drag out tournament. But there was also like a baby wading pool where you could pull the floating ducks out and win prizes and all kinds of stuff that was going on. But the tournament of itself was, a big to-do at the company. And then everything we collected became a shower gift, and it was just a fun themed party and a lot of fun as a party.
We used to do so many themed parties. I remember a murder mystery party. I don't know what that was for.
There was a murder mystery party?
At my house.
Oh, okay.
And there was like the invite was like a lumpy mailer that had a bottle of poison.
Not a.
Well, it was labeled poison.
Okay.
I was a kid. It was real poison.
So it was real.
Yeah. I was like, oh my gosh, there's poison. Yeah, but that was the invite. We used to do, a lot of cool parties.
There was a lot of cool.
We still have a cool party.
We do.
I really enjoyed the summer
party
last year.
We need to up our themes, apparently.
Yes.
How did you do in the hold'em tournament?
I think I made it about halfway before I got crushed out, but I don't remember who. It was probably, if I remember right, it was someone unexpected that took it from there, by just being a nice conservative player.
Sure.
Right? And held to the very last and went all in on it, so.
Well, cheers to 30 years.
Cheers to 30 years.
Cheers.
Thanks for joining us. You can learn more about Trek at trek.com.
If you liked this episode of Sidetracked, rate and review it, share it with a friend, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts or Spotify.
See you next time.
See ya.